And a big welcome into the 3 a.m. Coney podcast. I've decided to do a more engaging intro because we have most of our audience on YouTube now. And we've got the video podcast on Spotify. So we're going to jump right into it. We've got Russ Heltman joining the show. All Bearcats, all Bengals. And we've got a ton of Bengals stuff to talk about. Bearcats in the news. It's weird. I don't know if it's because there's so many people doing this job or if I'm looking harder, but there just seems to be a lot in the Cincinnati sports news cycle for this time of year. And I guess credit the NFL for being such an addicting product that it's going to stay in the news cycle constantly. Russ, welcome to the show. Excited to run through our load of topics today and for you to help me break them all down.
Good looking rundown, and we are loaded up. Great time to be a Cincinnati sports fan, unless you root for the Reds. Although, 6-4, they're kind of keeping that nice little 6-4 pace over the past 10 to 15 games, each and every time you look at the standings in the last 10.
Yeah, I refuse to be positive, and they are not in the rundown for a specific reason. In fact, I'm kind of upset we mentioned them at all.
That's fine. I didn't get the memo on that. That's okay.
Oh, yeah. We've nixed the Reds for a little while. It's because Phil Castellini gets me so worked up, and I'm not interested in being stressed out. One place that wasn't stressful at all for us as fans last year were those Baltimore Ravens games. and that brings us to what was a really excellent podcast appearance from our boy Joe Burrow. He dropped it right after his press conference, so we hadn't heard from him all offseason, and then bang, bang, official football press conference in the uniform and a nice laid-back podcast. I'm going to play the most significant quote from his appearance on the Full Send podcast, and then Russ and I are going to discuss it.
Lamar?
I love playing the Ravens.
Just had two crazy games last year.
Yeah, I love playing the Ravens because they talk.
They talk a lot?
They talk. I love that.
I feel like the score was 47, like 20.
It was a lot to a little.
Yeah, but both times. Because you beat them one time, they beat you one time.
No, we beat them both.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I threw for 520-something in the second one, and I threw for 400-something in the first one.
Fucking
Jamar had like 260 some yards in the first game.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love playing the Ravens. They like to talk. And so when I don't start the talking, but I usually, if somebody, you know, pokes me, I can talk.
And it was a lot to a little, Russ, both times. I mean, the savage nature of it and the dismissive brush of the hand is just fantastic. And it's exactly what we love to see from our boy, Joey B. And I mean, that's poking the bear. Ravens fans know it. I mean, he's just like poke, poke, poke. I mean, he poked him when he threw it over the top of their heads to get the 525. I mean, this was awesome to watch for me, Russ.
No doubt. I love the silent confidence. It's a big trademark of Joe Burrow, and you obviously are more than in your wheelhouse to have that type of silent confidence, especially when you put up 416 yards, 3 touchdowns, 1 interception in the first game last year, and then follow it up with 525, 4 tutties, no picks, and a average of 11.4 yards per attempt. Pretty, pretty good, and a pretty big encapsulation, I think, especially in that final game, December 26th, Baltimore on their last leg. They had, I think they were down to like their fourth string corner as their number one corner on the team at that point in the season. So obviously it's going to be a much different Baltimore Ravens roster that he goes up against this fall. And I'm sure the Baltimore Ravens and their brass and leadership in terms of the player group out there in Maryland are thinking that we'll go definitely on their end. And it's probably the opposite for Joe Burrow, given how he reacted in that podcast.
Well, but dude, we got to remember this rivalry has really gotten ignited. You got John Harbaugh and Zach Taylor jawing at each other coming off the field in the last game. I mean, just some really intense moments. And we got to remember that road game in Baltimore, the only player to have put up 400 yards, 4 touchdowns on the road in Baltimore was Peyton Manning. And it was like prime Peyton Manning. And Joe Burrow did it in his first trip to Baltimore, or was his second trip? However, whatever trip it was, he did it in his second season, first full season starting with the team. And these comments, combined with the comments last year after the bludgeoning of the Pittsburgh Steelers, where he said, "We have higher aspirations than beating the Pittsburgh Steelers." For my entire life, Russ, it's been the Steelers. It's Steelers week. My childhood bullies. I mean, relative term, but you know, the kids that I didn't like, and we got into arguments on the playground all the time, so to say, well, they were all wearing Steelers jerseys. So that this has been like a lifelong thing for a lot of Bengals fans with the Pittsburgh Steelers as being the more relevant rivalry. And I wanted to ask you, as a Cincinnati Bengals reporter, as a lifelong Cincinnati guy, which rivalry matters more now? Has Joe Burrow and then Patrick Queen talking some smack on the Rich Eisen show? You know, it's like, yeah, I kind of hate the way he just handles himself. It makes you really want to be competitive with him on the field. Has the Ravens rivalry leaped the Steelers because of the events of the last 12 months?
I think it might, and that's a good debate question. It's kind of crazy that we can even get there at this point. But when you look at the Steelers, to me, they're in no man's land. Abject no man's land. They just drafted a quarterback in the first round, and they still don't have an offensive line to put ahead of him. I don't know who's going to be here on this team in terms of star power in the next 3 to 4 years outside of TJ Watt. And so when you look at it from that perspective, also Matt Canada, can he even call plays in the NFL? Can he even keep a job in the offensive coordinator position for longer than 2 seasons, which he had trouble doing even at the college level? So I think the Steelers have the most question marks by far of any team in this division, outside of obviously what's lingering over Deshaun Watson and the Browns, but that's going to get fixed, and we'll get a firm confirmation on what's going to happen there in terms of his fate this season. So once that gets cleared up, the Steelers are kind of out there in no man's land, and to me, it's a 3-team race for this division. And given the big brother, little brother nature of the Bengals over the Browns in the past 20 years, and the fact that this Ravens rivalry has so much spice underneath it from the players, from the alumni, and Bart Scott with the red dot comment last year, it's all over the place, Lucas. And I think it's more fun and more engaging than the Steelers rivalry at this point.
Well, the thing about the red dot comment is it felt like a directive from like John Harbaugh, the way Bart Scott ripped that out of his mouth. You're like, is that really what we're saying here? This red dot BS? So it's all built up. And I think what happened to me, Russ, is the Pittsburgh Steelers were the bully for a very long time. Well, the Cincinnati Bengals last year, they didn't just knock the bully down. They punched the bully in the mouth 3 or 4 times. They grew about 2 inches taller, and it's not this bully thing anymore. And so when that's removed from the Steelers rivalry, now it's just, okay, well, this is the most historic team in our division. There was a long history there. There's a lot of bad blood from the past, but it doesn't feel like this iteration of the Bengals carries as much weight with that rivalry. And now we've had a lot of equity and past built up with Baltimore. You know, the Andy Dalton play to remove him from the playoffs. Well, I mean, we remember the AJ Green stuff. I mean, a lot of great moments that have built up. And now you have the first iteration of trash talking, truly. I mean, Ray Lewis, Chad Ocho a little bit. But this has gotten to the really high level, up to the coaches, the organizations. It's all about Baltimore. I love playing the Ravens. It's just reached a different level. And because the Steelers aren't a bully anymore, Russ, I think you can say that they're the biggest rival of the Cincinnati Bengals right now.
No doubt. And you think maybe, I think it's kind of in the hands, in my eyes, of Deshaun Watson and Lamar Jackson, how they play against the Bengals, how those matchups play out over the next 2 seasons, I think will solidify what the 2020s big rivalry in this division will end up being. And whether it's the Ravens against the Bengals against the Browns, I truly think the Bengals are going to be a part of one of those rivalries because they are the most well-built for sustained success from the top down, front office-wise, and how they handle their contracts, to what Joe Burrow does and saying hello to the rookies, ingratiating himself on that front, getting the cookies and cupcakes ready for guys like Lyle Collins and Alex Kappa when they come in as free agents. The way this team is moving and rowing in the right direction, I think, encapsulates why they should be that kind of marquee franchise in this division for the next decade. And we'll see whether or not Lamar Jackson or Deshaun Watson is able to wedge their way into that second kind of grouping in the AFC North and be that number one rival for what I think will be the top team in this division when we look at total wins from 2021 to 2030.
Well, I think because you can trust the consistency of the quarterback play. And I just think that, I think the Browns are the rival where the Browns never admit that the Bengals are their biggest rival, and the Bengals never admit that the Browns are their biggest rival. And it's kind of this, it's this brotherly thing that goes on. And I definitely could see the Browns launching as the biggest rival if it all of a sudden becomes significant playoff games that are on the line. Like if the Browns and Bengals play in the playoffs two out of three seasons, now that rivalry's launched to a whole new level. So I just think the Ravens are the most present rivalry, and because there isn't a bully anymore, the most present rivalry is the rivalry that's going to exist. So you mentioned some things there. The cupcakes, the recruitment from Joe Burrow, the being the quintessential franchise guy. This is a conversation that you and I have had this since the dude got drafted. You and I sat down after he got drafted and go, okay, how can the Bengals get the most out of the quarterback contract? Because we understand that the most important asset in the NFL is a quarterback contract that exists out of the top five. You don't want to be in that top five range. And the way the Chiefs set up Mahomes' deal, he's going to be out of the top five for the majority of his contract, yet still be an extremely rich individual. Will Joe Burrow take the Mahomes route, or is he going to take the Deshaun Watson route? And I think that there was a lot of comments in this press conference, Russ, that lead me to believe he's not going to take the fully guaranteed money route, at least like demand it and pound the table for it. And I think Joe Burrow is going to work hand in hand with the Cincinnati Bengals to make them as competitive as possible over the entire length of his career. And I think it's because he grew up from some money. He understands the value of contracts. He was a Goldman Sachs intern, so he really understands numbers. He also values money, but he understands how much more money he can make if they're competitive in conference championships and in Super Bowls. So I see this contract being leaning a Mahomes-type deal than a Deshaun Watson, take every dollar I can get. And screw him on the cap type of contract. I really see that from Joe Burrow, especially because he said, Russ, I do not like the things that football brings. Like, that's not what he's in it for. And I loved hearing that from him right out of his mouth during this podcast.
Right. I mean, the opposite of that would be like what? Like a Kayvon Thibodeau, who he's just the easiest one, the most pertinent one, because he was just sliced apart in the draft. But you never want to have a guy that you ever worry about them wanting to do all they can to bring a Super Bowl to your franchise. Not that Kayvon Thibodeau is like that, but Kayvon Thibodeau has never said, I don't like the stuff that football brings me. And that's exactly what Joe Burrow has not only said, but demonstrated with his actions over the first 2 years of his NFL career. The fact that he's not going out and getting all these endorsements, he's focusing on his work. Last year, it was kind of hard for him though, obviously with the ACL repair and having to go through all of the rehab there would have been a little difficult to get a bunch of commercial setups and shoots done at that point of his career. But I don't get the sense, just like you, Lucas, that he's going to want and hold the Bengals, going to want to hold the Bengals over the fire for all the guaranteed money possible, a fully guaranteed money type of contract. The only reason Deshaun Watson did that is because he knew he had the leverage to do it. And because he wanted to make all the money he can, and that's more power to him. The Browns have some issues to figure out with their cap, with how they've structured Deshaun Watson's deal over the next few years. But to me, I'm with you. I just don't see him going the route of trying to be the new leader in the clubhouse for number one paid quarterback in the NFL. And maybe if the contract value states he is the leader in the clubhouse, it's going to be, like you said, a 8, hopefully 10 year long contract where you can borrow from the bank of Joe Burrow. And that's what you have to hope the Bengals start doing if they want to sustain contending for championships with Joe Burrow. They will be able to make the playoffs every year and have a shot to make the playoffs, win the AFC North every year, as long as Joe Burrow is healthy, playing 16 to 17 games in the Bengals uniform. But the checkbook is going to start filling up here quick. It's going to start getting bloated with these contracts, how much money they're going to have to pay all these good players. It's the best problem to have in sports, and you would love to have that extra avenue of an asset in Joe Burrow's contract where you can push guaranteed money. You can push money from down the line into signing bonuses earlier in the contract, be able to free up some more cap space that way and continue to, like I said, borrow from the bank of Joe Burrow and go scorched earth this entire decade. That should be the goal. 10 years of sustained chances of making it to the final four of this league. And if the Bengals front office pulls the right strings and Joe Burrow is meaningfully gracious with his ability to allow them to pull the strings, then I don't think you can ask much else if you're a Bengals
fan. Well, he's created so much value for himself within the organization that they're going to be able to sit down and have this conversation and it be okay. And, you know, and talk about, Joe, what do you want? What exactly do you want out of this contract? What type of financial security are you looking for? What type of charitable contributions are you looking for the Bengals to do? How can we mold this organization in your image? And this is the thing that Joe Burrow understood better than anybody. It wasn't just the idea of coming back to Ohio. It's that the amount of power you have as the savior of an organization is it's not a fathomable thing. Ask LeBron James in Cleveland. He left them twice, and he's still probably the most popular athlete in the history of the city by a long margin. He's definitely the most popular, but he still might be the most loved in the history of the city. When you're the savior, you wield tremendous power in the market, tremendous power over the front office. And that power is not quantifiable by dollars. And I think Joe Burrow understands that his investment ability is what's going to separate him being a billionaire or not, not whether he makes $400 million or $450 million on the contract. He knows it's how he works the stock market. He knows it's what businesses he invests in. He's smart enough to get that. And I just see this heading to either a cap-tied percentage or some sort of really friendly negotiable deal for the Cincinnati Bengals because he wants them to be competitive. Now, I could see Joe doing something like opt-outs every 2 years, player options, right? Avenues to check a conservative ownership group. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't mind that. If you told me, hey, Joe Burrow has an opt-out every 2 years, great. That's a nice check on the Bengals. Okay. You know, make sure that you're spending money on free agents and you're committed to actually changing the organization. Now, there's so many ways that you could go about this, but I think that it will get done in a way that the Bengals find negotiable to be a competitive team moving forward. And I think that they're going to try to find a way to keep T. Higgins. It might be a lot of we might see a more defense. We might see one more offensive player drafted next year too, if they're trying to keep T. Higgins. So interesting moving forward for the Cincinnati Bengals. Way too early Burrow contract speculation. This is going to be the topic. I want you to know, and you know this already, Russ, this is the topic, especially if this thing starts, you know, like I predicted 10-1, which I predicted when I went through my schedule, a 10-1 start. If it's a 10-1 start, do you know how often we're going to be talking Joe Burrow contract? It's every second we're not talking about the season. It's about how much is this going to cost? What does he want? How much is he willing to work with? Especially with, you know, the history of the Brown family and now the national media attention on it. Whether the Bengals get the deal done or not is going to determine a lot of the narrative on Mike Brown. God forbid it enters any sort of negotiation period. The Bengals are going to catch some shrapnel if there's any sort of negotiation with Joe Burrow that makes its way into the public eye. It's going to be a tenuous time. I hate it. Hopefully they get a 10-year contract done. And then you and I are never going to talk about it. Our kids are going to be the next people to talk about the contract. You know, that's where I'm at with the whole thing.
Crazy to think about. But yeah, that's the hope.
Yeah, I mean, but at least he's performed that everybody's like, yeah, we definitely should pay him. I would hate to be having the should we pay him or not.
Right. This is the furthest thing from a Daniel Jones question that they are having over there in the Meadowlands in New Jersey. So this is all of this talk about speculation, Joe Burrow's contract, everybody's contract. It's all the problems you want to have if you are a sports franchise or a fan of a sports franchise.
Undoubtedly. And speaking of fans, you have had a lot of great opportunities living in the Cincinnati area to experience FC Cincinnati. And I know you're not a reporter for the team, but they're fun now. This is the greatest team in FC Cincinnati history. I don't know how they accomplished it in such short order, but they could
got rid of the right? Dutch. It's a quick fix. Just get rid
just
of the
get
Dutch.
Rid of all the Dutch guys. It didn't seem like a good idea. And as a German, I was like, I don't know. If you get a lot of Von whatevers, they better have a really good roster to succeed. And I just don't know, but I love what Pat Noonan's doing, and they could literally stop the season right now. And I'd say they're the greatest team in FC Cincinnati history. And that's already an accomplishment. They're scoring a lot. They've got Lucho Acosta. They're scoring a lot of late goals, key goals, and they're doing it with not a lot of opportunities with the ball in the other team's box. It makes them feel like a really clutch team. They speak a lot about character. Maybe the Bengals bled into them a little bit, Russ. How fun has it been at the stadium, and how fun has it been, you know, really being engaged into the FC Cincinnati landscape? They're top half in the MLS in attendance, and especially in TQL, which doesn't have a large capacity. They can't really compete with Atlanta. Got to be fun in there, man.
No doubt. I went to the, what was the game against Toronto? It was the Toronto game where Toronto FC got the red card early, and then they ended up taking them out 2-0, FC did, and got the nice Fox 19 box for that. That was a very nice perk of that evening. And I picked the wrong season to do game day comms for the FC Cincinnati Football Club, because last year I saw one home win sitting there doing stats up in the press box the entire season. One home win. One time I sent to our statisticians, W, final for FC Cincinnati. Once, all season. One time I got to send that. And to go where they were last year to now, where they're getting road wins, they're getting massive, massive victories against good teams in this conference, in the Eastern Conference, and in this league, it's really impressive. Minnesota, a team they had never beaten in MLS, they go out to Minnesota and get the job done this year. Just a perfect example right there. And it's just, it, to me, the one thing that I really hope this start at 12 matches in, 6-5-1, only 3 points back of the overall number one position in the Eastern Conference. I truly do hope, even though they are number in the top half of the MLS in attendance, I didn't see quite as many supporters as I hoped to see in that 2-0 victory over Toronto. And Lucas, if they could start stacking crowds at TQL Stadium, actually filling that thing up, then it's going to explode even more. But so far, Pat Noonan, the rest of the brain trust there, Chris Albright, all those guys just done a fantastic job so far. And it's the Philadelphia Union touch is working very well out over there and over the Rhine.
Well, the city wants them to be fun. I mean, you can tell. Like, so if they're competitive and in the playoffs throughout the summer, where the Reds are going to be 16 games below 500, what seems like the whole time, that's a really good recipe for some great crowds and for some really competitive soccer. And listen, there's some stats here that suggest they're sustainable. They're second in expected goals. They're second in expected goals assisted. So they really do. And the fact that they're tops in that stat, and they've only had one game where they dominated possession over 50% of the time, that's insane. They're really taking advantage of those opportunities in the final third. They're creating well, and that's up to Lucho Acosta, who's an MVP candidate-ish, because right now he leads the MLS in key passes with 42 of them. I mean, this guy is breaking down teams in the final third in key moments to get wins, and if he continues it like this, and he pushes FC Cincinnati, a team that's crawled out of the basement, and the most popular video of them on YouTube is how they're the worst franchise in the history of North American sports. It's got like almost 1 million views. So if you go from that all the way to, hey, they're one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference that are hosting a damn playoff game at this stadium, you've got to consider Lucho Acosta as a legitimate MVP candidate, because they're doing it with limited chances in the final third, and they're still one of the best offenses in the MLS so far.
Yeah, and when you look at all those chances and those goals that they get on the limited opportunities, it's largely the only reason they're creating those opportunities, because this team is still, you know, I think they hover around 18th in MLS spending this year. They kind of pulled back the reins a bit this year to see what they had on this roster, and then I hopefully for FCC fans, they start spending a little bit more next year. But it's pretty much a bare bones roster of what Pat Noonan and Chris Albright ultimately want to build here. So that, I think, makes it even more impressive when you look at the fact that Acosta, 8 points overall, 3 assists, 5 goals, second on the team to Brandon Vasquez, and right up in there in the top 10 in the Eastern Conference. He's just a creator. He does so much with so little, Lucho Acosta does. And personally, for me, I truly do think he's an MVP candidate. I hope he can keep this pace up for the rest of the year and hopefully bag close to 20 points. That would be amazing if he's able to get to that mark on the season. And it's just really satisfying for me, because he was the guy last year through all of that garbage, all of that losing, that I thought cared the most out of anybody. Yeah. He had to face the brunt of it the most. He was a captain throughout the year. He had to face the media week in and week out, talk about what went wrong, what kept going wrong, what continuously went wrong. And to go from there to sharpen up his game in the offseason, a short offseason at that, when I think it was the shortest in MLS history, given how they changed the schedule because they wanted to give players time, I think, for the World Cup later in the year. To go from that to here, I think it gives you even more reason to think that he is an MVP type of candidate and a guy that truly should be wearing that captain's armband.
Yeah, and listen, it's a tough award to win, the Landon Donovan MVP, especially when you got Jesus Ferreira, who's vying for time to be the starting nine for the U.S. men's national team at the World Cup this fall in Qatar. And he has got 9 goals in leading FC Dallas, who's one of the best teams in the league. And you've got the defending champions in New York City, who've got a lot of great players, young players, exciting players. So it's a tough award to win. And God, if Inter Miami apparently is adding Lionel Messi, I don't know if that's true or not. I saw it was a big rumor that he's going to buy 35% of Inter Miami and join the MLS. That was flying around this morning. So that's coming. So hopefully, if anybody's going to win the MVP, you better do it now, because I don't care how old that man is. In this league, with his ball control and with some of the defenders, it's going to be a lot of scoring. And Inter Miami needs it. They're bottom in the league in attendance right now. So they really need it. Well, we're going to dive a lot more into the New England Revolution matchup. I might save that to do a preview on a show either Friday or Saturday morning as I try to string these together and make it more consistent for everybody, because then everybody that's watched the show will continue to watch it. And that's what we're trying to do. But I wanted to get into your area of expertise, Russ, the Cincinnati Bearcats. And I've got your article pulled up here from All Bearcats, which you're doing a lot of work for, and great work.
Pumping it out, baby.
So this is Russ Heltman's article. Bearcats offer top two. That's a tongue twister you put in there for me, buddy. The top two 2024 Ohio prospect. They are taking big swings in this recruiting thing, man. And they should be taking some big swings with where they are as a program. I mean, I almost said franchise because it's kind of turning into that in college sports. But as a program, as a football organization, the Bearcats are in a space where they can have a pretty high recruitment ceiling, especially with the amount of NFL talent they pumped out. So my question to you, man, what's the Bearcats recruitment ceiling? You know, touch on what you mentioned in the article and describe to me, with them entering the Big 12, can they be a top 5, top 10 type of recruitment program? What can they produce under Luke Fickell?
Well, they've been the number one ranked Group of 5 school in recruiting, I think, each of the past 4 years under Luke Fickell. They come in 2022, according to 24/7 Sports, right there, sneaking inside the top 30 to the 40 schools. They did a really nice job in 2022 with their class, 42 right now, and still 19 commits, number one Group of 5 school. And I believe only Oklahoma State and Baylor had better recruiting classes than UC did among the permanent new Big 12 teams, because next year we're going to have 14 teams in the Big 12. Texas and Oklahoma still going to be there, along with the 3 AAC schools and BYU. That basketball conference next year is going to be unbelievable. It will be the greatest and toughest conference in the history of college basketball. But sticking with football, I think they can start creeping up from, obviously, you got to get from the 40s into the 30s, into the 20s. And right now, you look at a school in UC that's sitting in the 2023 rankings, according to 24/7 Sports, at 15th right now. Wow. So obviously, that's taken with a grain of salt. You got to put pen to paper on these national letters of intent for it to really be official on these. And we know with the transfer portal nowadays, recruitment as fickle as it is already, who knows how many of these 8 commits that they've already landed will end up signing. But with how much fortitude Luke Fickell brings to the table on the recruiting sense, then I think at least 7 of these guys are going to end up becoming Bearcats, and they're going to keep adding players throughout the next 6 months to the 2023 class. So when you look at 2023, the amount of 4-star offers they sent out was almost double what they sent out in 2022. They are recognizing, along with the rest of the nation, looking 9 draft picks, third most in the NFL draft this year among any FBS school. That stuff matters greatly. I called it the biggest and most important weekend in the history of the program, because of what that means. Taking 0-star, 2-star, 3-star athletes and putting them in the NFL, and not only in the NFL, but a guy in Ahmad Gardner who just signed a first-round contract worth over $20 million guaranteed. Like, this stuff matters greatly, especially to players not only in Ohio, but nationally. And when you focus on Ohio, they're coming, Ohio State. UC is coming. Ohio State, it was really cute back in the 60s when you you shot down Lucas and I's alma mater from getting into the Big Ten after they built the Convocation Center. It's been really cute how you've tried to make sure no Ohio school has entered or will enter the Big Ten, and you've done a great job at that. But they don't control the Big 12.
Nope.
And now, for the first time in the history of Ohio State football, there will be two Power 5 schools in the same state. And you could argue the coach in Cincinnati is every bit as good as the coach in Columbus. And I am very excited to see how these recruiting battles play out over the next 5 to 6 years. And the one you mentioned, the top two 2024 recruit, Bryce West out of Glenville High School up in the Cleveland area. He's a just day one. I think he could come in and play cornerback at an FBS Power 5 level right now. He is that talented as a sophomore. And he is slated as a 99% chance to go to Ohio State right now by On3's predictor metric. But UC just sent in that offer. And we'll see if Coach Kerry Coombs, the former defensive coordinator at Ohio State, who just came down the road back to his old stomping grounds, used to coach at UC earlier last decade, and he's back once again, hungrier and more motivated than ever. He's a guy that has brought in major cornerback talent throughout his time at Ohio State, and he could be bringing major cornerback talent throughout his time at UC. It's very, very cool to see some of these in-state Ohio recruiting battles actually become battles.
Well, yeah, because now you can say, hey, we can win a national championship, and I think Cincinnati could be a good foible. By the way, during your rant there, I laughed because you said that recruitment is fickle.
Which, I didn't even mean to do it.
Come on, man. It was too perfect. It was too perfect. The thing about the Cincinnati Bearcats is they're in a position because they're such a defensive-oriented coaching staff, program, recruitment base, and they can compete defensively with the best teams in the country. Especially, I know Sauce Gardner was special, but I think they've got the recruitment cycle down, and Luke Fickell is such a great coach. I think that they're going to be able to replicate the defensive performance, maybe not to the same level next year, but moving forward into the Big 12, being the defensive team in the Big 12, I like that advantage. I like being the team that's doing something a little different than everybody else. I mean, Chip Kelly almost dominated college football just because his players ran to the line faster. I mean, if you do something different in sports that works and is unique, and the Bearcats having a dominant defense in a conference that hasn't been able to figure out the defense, I don't know, for 40 years, that to me is something that can be really exciting for the Cincinnati Bearcats right away in the Big 12 to compete for a Big 12 championship right away. And that should be the goal of the program. And listen, because they're going in the Big 12 this year, Russ, they have an opportunity. If they go undefeated this year, they're not going to keep them out. They're not going to keep them out of the playoff. Because they know that they're in the Big 12 next year. I really doubt they keep them out because they know that they're going to be in the Big 12, that they'll be a part of the Power 5 right then, and they can still keep other Group of 5 teams out in the future by letting the Bearcats in this year because they're becoming a Power 5 program. Not saying there won't be some shenanigans from the committee, but you let them in once, they're going to be in the Big 12. They go undefeated again. I don't know.
I wouldn't put it at 0%, but I wouldn't put it above 1%, which is probably the chance that they had last year going into the season. I truly don't think they really have a chance, Lucas, given the schedule that they are playing, the schedule games that were clearly played by the American Athletic Conference in the final season of the UC Bearcats in the conference, not having them play two of the top three projected teams in the conference during the regular season. I mean, it was a little shady what happened there, I don't know why you wouldn't want UC to play the hardest schedule in your league so that you could get that check on the way out as they are going into the Big 12, because the AAC will still get that revenue sharing check from the college football playoff because they will be sending an AAC school to that event should UC defeat the odds once again. But with no Desmond Ridder, with no 9 to 10 draft prospects, and most importantly, no top 10 preseason ranking, because there's no chance this team will be ranked in the top 10 heading into the year. That's the biggest issue, I think, Lucas. The inability, I think, for the committee to take a team that starts the year maybe top 25. I wouldn't be shocked if they're kept out of the top 25 to start and bring them all the way up into the top four. The only reason UC ended up making it last year was a lot of luck. They went undefeated. They dominated, for the most part, their entire schedule. And they started the season ranked eighth in the AP pool. And that's the biggest thing that you have to have in your favor if you're a Group of Five school. You have to be ranked at a high position to start, I think.
Well, we'll see. It would be a more of an end-of-the-year thing. Again, a lot of things have to break their way. They would have to go undefeated.
And they got to beat Arkansas week one. That start all starts right there.
Yeah. I mean, but if they go undefeated, they can look at the committee at the end of the year and go, really? I mean, we're a Big 12 team. We just produced more NFL draft picks than Texas. So why on earth?
Yeah, Big 12 put 12 players in the NFL draft. Got 12 players drafted in the NFL this year. The Bearcats had 9. And they had 2 more players taken on free agent contracts. That's all they have to say to the committee.
Yeah,
you just put 9 guys in, and you only got 11 on the conference we're going to.
Yeah, there you go, bang. And I think that's an argument you can make at the end of the year. But a lot of things have to play out. Again, I put it at 0%. I said on this show numerous times they will never be in the playoff. I said never, ever, ever, and they did it. And because everything broke, only one thing had to go left or right, and they would have kept him out of the damn thing, and they literally couldn't. They literally could not do anything except put them in, and that was the only way it happened. So we're talking college football. We've had the most interesting thing in college football history arguably happen today. I've got a clip from Texas A&M. I didn't have a chance to pull what Nick Saban said, but basically Nick Saban was like, hey, Texas A&M bought all their recruits, and that's why we lost out in recruiting. And after Nick said that, Jimbo Fisher called a press conference today and had some words for his old friend and mentor, Nick Saban. Here is what I thought was the best moment from Jimbo Fisher's press conference today. And the "what are we toddlers" is not what Jimbo Fisher said. It's what Russ texted me. And I felt like that was just a really good title for the topic. Let's take a listen to Jimbo.
People think they're God. Go dig into how God did his deal. You may find out about a guy that a lot of things you don't want to know. We built him up to be the czar of football. Go dig into his past or anybody that's ever coached with him. You can find out anything you want to find out, what he does and how he does it. And it's despicable.
Woo-hoo!
What? I hadn't heard that. I saw the quotes, but I had not heard the soundbite.
Come on, man. It's almost worth playing twice. It really is. It really is almost worth playing. I'm playing it again. It's worth playing. So this is the most fire thing any professional coach or college coach has ever said about another coach.
People think they're God. Go dig into how God did his deal. You may find out about a guy that a lot of things you don't want to know.
Go find out how God did his deal. Have you read the Old Testament? That's Nick Saban. This dude went religious. He literally went biblical on Nick Saban about this recruitment thing, Russ. And it's just, it's the best thing I've seen in a very long time. I didn't think Pat Beverly could be topped. And he was topped
within 3 days.
In the same week, yeah.
Wow, that's incredible. And now I need to know, where are these skeletons? Because I don't believe, and I'm with Jimbo here. I'm with him. If you're Nick Saban, I cannot believe. It's one thing to say that Texas A&M bought all their recruits. Sure, it's if something's stinky, it's probably smelly for a reason. But that being said, he didn't bring up any legitimate proof. He goes, it was in the newspaper. And then the same sentence, the same comment. He goes, Jackson State paid that number one recruit $1 million to go there last year. With no evidence, no backing, just says, oh, it was in the newspaper. It's like, dude, that is slander. That is legitimate slander. And I think Deion Sanders has even more reason to be upset. And I don't know if he's come out with his statement today, but he posted on Twitter last
night. Can't be topped. Just let it sit. Cannot be topped.
Like, just let Jimbo speak for you right there, because I'm with him and I'm with Deion Sanders. And if you're Nick Saban, this is low, dude. You're supposed to be the best among college football. You're supposed to take the high road. You're supposed to do it the right way. Like, dude, once again, what are we, toddlers? Do you think we were born yesterday? No one on this green earth believes that you have built the greatest dynasty in the history of college football, arguably the history of sports, given how difficult it is to win in the modern game of college football at a consistent level, just because the kids wanted to come play for the brand of Alabama and no monetary assets were given out.
To like, be fourth string, to be your fourth string running back for 3 years.
So like how are you going to make those accusations and then on the same side say we do things the right way? Nobody in Power Five college football winning conference championships and winning national championships is doing things quote unquote the right way. It's the right way for me. I could care less if the players get paid. I hope they're getting paid. Yeah. I want them to get paid every cent that anyone is willing to pay them because that's the kind of society I live in. That's the kind of society Lucas operates in. We all get to operate in the same society except for college athletes up until now. And as soon as, we'll say it, God gets knocked off his pedestal just a bit, first time ever, Lucas, is it coincidental that he had never lost to an assistant before last season? Texas A&M beats him. Jimbo Fisher takes him out in the middle of the year, puts his college football playoff chances on the ropes. And then his old assistant, with a better team, arguably the greatest team ever assembled defensively in the modern era, given how many draft picks they just sent in the first round, tied a record with 5 first-round defensive draft picks on that Georgia team, beats him in the national championship game. Oh, it's all very coincidental that all this hemming and hawing is happening right now. Color me shocked.
And listen, it's because the argument that has been thrown at everybody, especially from small school people. I mean, you and I used to do radio shows in Athens, Ohio, where there's a Mac school. And we would get calls about this NIL thing. And people were like, this would kill Bobcat football ever being competitive. And I'm like, guys, well, first off, it's not competitive now. Second off, if we've got a billionaire that comes out of this school and he says that we want a competitive football program here, we have the opportunity to be more competitive. You don't have to pitch. You can just pitch based on money. It's why Jackson State can recruit people. This idea that having economic freedom for athletes is going to hurt parity is a joke. If anything, it's going to help parity because Alabama can't pay everybody. They can't give sponsorship deals to the whole damn team. It's going to be spread out. And kids are going to start to figure out, if I go to a mid-level SEC school and break their record for passing yardage, I'm going to be a lot more famous than being the 10th guy in a row to run Nick Saban's offense. And I'm going to have a lot more NIL potential at my time in Nashville breaking records for Vanderbilt than I will maybe winning the starting job at Alabama in 4 years. So This, the more this exists, the more parity will happen. And the less money there'll be for coaches' salaries, which means the less Nick Saban can dominate the sport. He is lashing out because this is hurting parity, which has been the main argument against this NIL thing from the jump from small school people. Listen, if rich and powerful people start biting back at something and starting using arguments pointed towards you, most of the time, they don't really believe those arguments. They're just trying to find a way to get you on their side so that they can protect their power, their money, and their victories. And that's what Nick Saban's tried to do with this entire situation.
And it's like, I get it. We kind of think that Texas A&M, it was kind of crazy. Texas A&M has literally, Lucas, according to 24/7 Sports, their 2022 recruiting class is the greatest recruiting class of all time. And that record's been getting set for the past 4 years. It's basically gotten broken every single year. The talent at the top just keeps getting better. Like, yeah, they probably paid them. But there is no paper trail. There is no definitive paper trail on every single one of these athletes that Texas A&M paid them. Sure, I hope they get paid. But you have to bring evidence when you're bringing stuff up like this. You have to bring hard, firm evidence. The Miami situation, completely different. I'm actually really glad the Miami situation is playing out like it did because it told me exactly who's paying who. I love it. I think it's like the Herbalife guy or some kind of nutrient law firm owner guy. He literally is just paying the Nigel Pack and Fardes Amuk, the two of the top 10 transfers in the college basketball transfer portal this year, 6 figures each to come play basketball for Miami. That's awesome. good for those guys.
Yes.
They get to go place, take what they did at their old schools, what they were able to accomplish there, and parlay that into six-figure money, almost $500,000. Like, how could anyone, as a red-blooded American, think that, A, that's bad for the person that it's going to, and B, that it's hurting college sports? Would Miami basketball be as talented as they are going to be in the fall and in November without NIL? No. Nope. Would UC, another example here, Ravon Griffith just became the one of the top recruits in 24/7 Sports era for UC. I believe he's like the seventh highest rated recruit of all time. The best recruit easily Wes Miller's been able to bring in since he started here. He was looking at Ohio State, UCLA, Kansas. Like, this guy had the blue bloods coming after him, and he decides to stay home in Cincinnati. Sure, it is about bringing a title to your hometown team, sticking in Cincinnati, kind of having that facade, having that to lean back on, having your family there. All that's well and good. But you can't tell me that Ravon Griffith is not going to be able to initially, day one, make more money off his name, image, and likeness as a hometown hero kid in Cincinnati versus going to UCLA and being the second, third, fourth, fifth option, the third or fourth freshman that's coming in a small pond or big fish in a, or little fish in a big pond type of scenario versus big fish, little pond in Cincinnati.
Let's relate this to what a lot of our listeners are familiar with, the Joe Burrow story. What if Ohio University had the opportunity to just pay Joe Burrow? How much different is his decision? Now, I think with Joe's mindset, I think he was going to go for national championships anyway. But imagine if they could offer Joe Burrow $300,000, come play in the MAC. That's what I'm talking about with the future of parity in this game. Is that
right? And it's like people, these coaches act like we care where the money comes from. They act like we care who's paying these kids. They act like that matters to us. No one cares. The only people that care are you, because your jobs, got a little bit harder. No one feels sorry for you. You're getting paid millions of dollars. You were getting paid millions of dollars off of free labor or under the table labor, still getting underpaid. And now it's starting to slowly come out into the open, but it's more out in the open than it ever was. And that's justice. That's the way it should be.
Yeah, because it's just about the law. And it's the same thing with the high school thing. I don't know if you saw the ruling from the OHSA, and we're about to get out of here at the end of the show, but the OHSA ruling, it was 2-1. They voted against name, image, and likeness. Guys, it's just as illegal to restrict the rights of 14, 15, 16, 17, and 18-year-olds as it is college kids. Just like it's illegal to restrict anybody's right to make their money on their name, image, and likeness. It is a rights issue. Dead stop. Now, you can put rules on competition, or you can do transfer rules, or you have to live in the district, but those rules already exist, and recruiting still happens in high school. And any argument about, oh, what's it going to do for the kids and what's that? Here's my opinion on it. That's the parents' problem.
Child actors.
Just whatever. We got Macaulay Culkin getting a meth addiction before his 21st birthday, and nobody blinks an eye, and they turn Home Alone on every Christmas. But God forbid a talented quarterback makes six figures when he's got the opportunity to, because how many of these great high school quarterbacks actually make a paycheck in the NFL? How many of them do? How many great wide receivers that grew up in a rough neighborhood could have got a check that changed their life early in their life and instead flamed out, never made it, and now never saw a dime for the work and the talent they had in the sport they played? Listen, if I get paid, and I've been paid and you've been paid, Russ, to cover and broadcast high school athletics, we have run sports radio shows that made a profit with sponsorship on high school athletics. The OHSAA is signing $1 million rights deals for high school athletics. So you can't tell me it's amateur. We talk about it. We criticize. There's fan bases. There's tailgates. There's ticket revenue. They should be, I'm not saying that the school should pay them because they're high schoolers. I'm saying that to restrict their rights at all is illegal. And the courts have already determined this. And no matter what you think of Brett Kavanaugh from some of his recent rulings, he stated out very clearly in the majority opinion, don't bring this whack stuff to this court. You cannot economically restrict people. So when the OHSA loses their ass in every courtroom from here till DC, you know, they can come crying back. You could just get out in front of this and make your own rules, and then we wouldn't have to deal with the entire issue, Russ. But instead, they want to fight and clute and kick and and all it does is create more chaos when it comes out because you didn't get in front of it. And it's exactly what happened here to the NCAA.
Right. And last comment from me on this. It's actually really shocking, right? That for years and decades, the NCAA had no plan and no institution set up ready to go when this inevitability ended up happening. And that's exactly what happened last year in the Supreme Court, which you just eloquently laid out. They had nothing ready to go, sitting there on their hands. And then they all want to complain about it being the wild, wild west. Where was the preparation? Bad preparation breeds bad results. You and I know that well from our broadcasting careers. So it's not shocking. And that's why I'm just rolling my eyes at all the hemming and hawing. And especially, like, my only comment on the OHSA thing, I can agree with you 100%. And if people say, oh, these children shouldn't be able to do this, if their parents sign off on it, they can go and make whatever kind of money, as long as it doesn't break the law, obviously, yeah, that they want to go make. So it's just like a child actor. The child actor's parents signed off on him being on set that much. The child actor's parents get the money and they distribute it back to the child in their own bank account. I don't understand how that's any different from the NIL.
And listen, if the schools don't want to get involved with it because it's a little outside the realm of academics, well, guess what? Then don't be involved with athletics and start sending it to clubs and take the European model. Because the law of an economic freedom for people should be followed no matter what the sanctity of the Tri-Valley Conference is at stake. Like, it's just, we got to
shout out the TVC.
Yeah, shout out the TVC. And the TVC would be fine. And guess what? If a famous athlete like a Cam Kittle, who was dominant there, did a commercial for the local car dealership and put $5,000 in his pocket, why does it matter? Why
and puts 100 more butts in the seats in the meantime as well. The TikTok star gets a sponsor on TikTok. He gets more followers. You get more people going out to Southwest Ohio. Everybody wins. I don't understand.
Everybody wins. Everybody wins. And everybody wins that subscribes to our show. If we get to 101 subscribers, I can go back to a Twitter troll and say, hey, now it's over 100. Is it legit now? Is it legit now? But whatever. We always have fun talking about it. Russ and I would do this even if nobody watched, but we appreciate everybody that watched. Like, rate, subscribe on YouTube and wherever you find podcasts. We thank you so much for watching. And Russ, I really appreciate you coming on, dropping some takes and dropping some Bearcat knowledge. We'll do plenty of these over the summer. FC Cincinnati is fun, and we're not going to talk about the damn baseball team. Okay? We're not going to talk about them.
No, we are not. I'm not watching them, so I'm not talking about them. That's my mantra.
The White Sox aren't saving me here in Chicago, so I don't know what to do.
Go Mets, baby. Go Mets.
Go Mets. Go Mets. We'll see you guys next time. We'll